We continue the Shiur in Gemara. Well, we were speaking about a topic called Maaseh Merkava, which means the vision of the heavenly spheres seen by Yechezkel the prophet. A topic which is so deep in Kabbalah that the Gemara says no person is allowed to study this unless he is a deep chachem, very wise and very learned. The other parts of Kabbalah, of course, lower than that, is permissible to be studied by everyone who has the proper degree of emunah, faith in this being the chachmat emet, wisdom of truth. Now, the Gemara says that one time Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was riding on a mule. Let's place this again. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was one of the top students of Hillel the Elder. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the chief rabbi of the Sanhedrin. He had five students. His main five students, and in Tiberias, in front of the grave of the Rambam, there you have Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's grave, and his five students. His five students were Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol, the great Rabbi Eliezer, the rabbi of Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Chananya, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yossi HaKohen, and Rabbi Elazar ben Arach. Now, these five students, there is a debate in Pirkei Avot as to which one of these five was the greatest. One says that Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol was the greatest. The Yochanan ben Zakkai said that if you took all the rabbis in the Gemara and put them on a scale, if you put Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol opposite them, he would outweigh all of them in greatness and wisdom. The other rabbi says that if you put all the rabbis on a scale, including Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol, and on the other side you put Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, he would outshine all of them. This was the debate. This story deals with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was riding along on a mule with his student Rabbi Elazar ben Arach. Now, to remind you again about Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, despite his greatness, we learned in the Gemara a story about where there is a certain place, a certain portion of territory, a city that's called Trugita and Yumsin. There are certain wines there and waters that are so tempting that a person who drinks that is drawn away from the spiritual and drawn into the ta'avot, the material desires. One day, Rabbi Elazar ben Arach came to that city. That is the city, the Gemara says, that drew away the 10 tribes, destroyed the 10 tribes, took them away from their attachment to Torah and Mitzvot. And the Gemara warns a person to stay away from there. Rabbi Elazar ben Arach came to that city. He drank from those waters, and the Gemara says that he forgot his learning. He forgot the Torah he had learned. When he returned, he was tested. His knowledge was tested. They asked him to read not a difficult passage in Gemara or Depth, but a pasuk in the Chumash, just simply to read it. The pasuk was, HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem, the first mitzvah that Hashem gave to the Jews, mitzvah of Pesach. HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem means this month is for you, the month of Nisan, which you have the Korban Pesach. Those three words, HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem, he read as HaChodesh HaYaliban. He changed every one of the three words, as though he could not even read those three words. The Gemara says that the rabbis prayed for him, and his knowledge was returned, was restored. Now, he pointed out then that Ezel says that this is not to be mistaken for so great a loss that he couldn't even read. Just note that when he changed those three words, he didn't change it into words that were meaningless. He changed it into words that had a meaning. The Chalesh Hayelig Ami is that the heart became deafened, stuffed where it could not absorb. And there was depth in this change too. He changed one letter with each word. As I said, then it seems clearly the three letters that would change comprise the word Rabbi, to show that a person who leaves his rabbi will forget his learning. His heart becomes stuffed, filled with wrong type of desires, and he will lose his knowledge of Torah. But it proves that the Beis Hamikdash was very sharp at the time, and he brought this message back with him. Now, this story pertains to this took place after he came back. Even it says that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, chief rabbi, was riding on a mule, and with him was Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, who was riding along slightly behind him. Elazar ben Arach said to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, "Rabbi, teach me something, a chapter, about the Ma'aseh Merkava, about the heavenly secrets of the vision of Yechezkel the prophet." Yochanan ben Zakkai replied, "My son, didn't I state previously that you cannot teach this topic to anyone unless he is extremely wise, great chacham, with inner depth?" Rabbi Elazar ben Arach said, "Well, Rabbi, then allow me to say before you something about this topic that you taught me. In other words, you are testing me if I have that wisdom since I went to this place and came back. Let me prove myself. Can I repeat something you once taught me?" Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, "Speak." At first, he got off his mule and he wrapped himself in a talit. He sat down beneath a tree. Rabbi Elazar ben Arach asked him, "Rabbi, why did you get down from your mule?" Yochanan ben Zakkai replied, "Because of the fact that you are about to speak on this heavenly topic. The Shekhinah is with us, and there are a host of angels accompanying us. How can I be sitting on a mule at that time?" Immediately, Elazar ben Arach began to speak a drush on this topic. A heavenly fire came down, surrounded the trees around them. All the trees began to sing forth praises to Hashem. Out of this fire, the malach, an angel, called out, "These are truly the words that explain the Ma'aseh Merkava." Yochanan ben Zakkai then stood up. He kissed the Rabbi Elazar ben Arach on the forehead, and he said, "Baruch Hashem, blessed is Hashem who has given a son, a child, to Abraham Avinu, who knows and understands to expound on the Ma'aseh Merkava like Rabbi Elazar ben Arach. There are some who know how to lecture, but can speak well, but they do not follow up their own teachings. They're not tzaddikim. There are some who are tzaddikim, but cannot speak or teach well. But you can both speak well, and you are a tzaddik too." This story was later told to Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Yossi, two other students of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Hananya, of course, was known as the Hakima de Yehudai, the wisest of all the rabbis, so he was the one who went into this debate with the 60 philosophers of Athens. We outwitted them. They were told about this. Rabbi Yehoshua said, "We too shall lecture on the Ma'aseh Merkava." They stopped, and Rabbi Yehoshua started to speak on this. This was in the middle of the day, middle of a summer day, when the sun was shining its brightest. Suddenly the sky became filled with clouds. In the clouds there appeared the symbol of the rainbow, a sign like the rainbow. And angels in heaven gathered around to listen to the Ma'aseh Merkava with a simcha, just as people gather around the orchestra playing in honor of a chatan and kala with such simcha. So Rabbi Yossi went and told this to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, what he had seen and heard. Yochanan ben Zakkai said, Ashrei lachem, Ashrei, blessed are you. Fortunate are those who gave birth to you. Fortunate are my eyes that see such things. And I want to inform you that in my dream, I saw all of us around, standing around Mount Sinai, and a voice came from heaven and said to us, come up here, ascend to this point. In heaven there are very great palaces awaiting you. You, your students, or your students' students are invited to be the front lines before the Shekhinah in heaven. So great is the pleasure in heaven when the study of Kabbalah is learned and taught properly. Therefore, in Kabbalah it says, it is written that the study of a passage of Kabbalah, the one who knows, so bring a mitzvah, then another person learning any other part of Torah for a month, possibly even for a year, cannot compare to the mitzvah of the study of Torah, Kabbalah. So, to go back to one point, it's important to mention this. So we said that the Yeshua began to lecture on the topic of the Masim and Kabbalah. The sun was shining brightly, clouds gathered, and then a sort of rainbow, sign of a rainbow appeared. But we know, the Gemara says, that a rainbow was declared by Hashem as a bad sign. After the flood that destroyed the world, Hashem made the rainbow as a sign of a treaty. It's a pasuk in Chumash. Hashem said, I have placed the rainbow in the sky now as a treaty, an agreement, that I will never again destroy the world, though the world may be evil as at the time of the flood. Which means, the Gemara says, that when we see the rainbow in the sky, it means the world is evil. The world would have been destroyed. The rainbow shows us that it's only because of Hashem's promise that it does not destroy the world, though it is evil. That means that the rainbow is a bad sign. In addition, the Gemara says that when there is a tzaddik in the world who is so great and so holy that his zechut can protect the entire world, the rainbow will not appear at that time, because there's no necessity for it, for the rainbow's this promise to protect the world. And that's why the Gemara says that in the time of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Zalg, there was never a rainbow in the sky. The time of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, there was never a rainbow in the sky. So why at a time like this does it say that the rainbow appeared? The answer is, it does not say the rainbow, it says Kamin Keshe, sort of a sign of a rainbow appeared. Now this means, the Zohar HaKadosh explains, but the rainbow has three colors, the rainbow itself. We know that the rainbow, of course, was created before the flood. Rainbow always existed. It was after the flood that Hashem appointed the rainbow as the symbol of the treaty. But the rainbow itself is holy. It stands for something extremely holy, because the rainbow has three colors. These three colors represent the three of the highest sefirot. Three sefirot, chesed, gevura, tiferet. Chesed is the characteristic of kindness of Hashem. Gevura is din, harsh judgment. And tiferet, beauty, which means combination of both, mixing, tempering justice with mercy. These represent the three fathers of the Jews. Abraham, who was known as the Ish HaChesed, one of those possessed as kindness, Yitzchak, Pachad Yitzchak, judgment, harshness. And Yaakov, who was known as the chosen one of the fathers of the Jews, because he possessed the qualities of both. The Keshet represents the three fathers of the Jews. This is something which is the highest degree of holiness. So that when we say here that the Kibin Keshet means that these top level items of holiness came be present then too, to listen to these words of Kabbalah expounded by Rabbi Yeshua ben Hanania. But we come to one of the amazing stories in Gemara, about which there is a tremendous amount of discussion generally, and about which, of course, the Zohar HaKadosh goes into in fine detail, all the books of Kabbalah. The Beitazal speaks about it at length, too. We cannot go into the many detailed facets. It is enough for us to just take the simple story itself, which in itself possesses a lot of depth. But the wording, that is the Gemara tells it to us, we must take with a fine, pure degree of emunah. The exact wording is, the Gemara says that there were four great tzaddikim, four rabbis and colleagues who entered into the garden. The wording is, nechnesu lepardes. A pardes is an orchard or a garden. Well, these four were Rabbi Akiva, Ben Azai, Ben Zoma, and Rabbi Elisha Ben Avuya, who was known later as Acher, the rabbi of Rabbi Meir, Balanes, who say these four entered into this garden. We are speaking about the garden of heaven, a high entry to the highest of the heavens. These four, every rabbi could visit heaven. And this part there represents the highest or the upper levels in heaven, where very few can enter into. These four decided to elevate themselves to ascend up to this upper levels of heaven to visit there. This, of course, was taking a very great risk, because the human mind, in its physical form, can conceive just a limited amount. It's dangerous for it to go too high. These four purified themselves and went into this new surroundings, heavenly surroundings. And it is called Pardes, because Pardes means a garden where flowers grow. We speak of this to imply this term to it. Generally, we use the word Pardes throughout as the four Pardes is four letters. Te, Reish, Dalet, Samach, the four types of study of Torah. In Chumash, for example, the Torah itself can be studied in four ways. The Pe stands for Pshat, which means the simple translation as we read it. The Reish stands for Remez. Remez means the hints that can be found more deeply. The Dalet is Derush. It's expounding on it much more depth. The Samach stands for Sod or Secret, the secrets of Kabbalah that are hidden in the Torah. They cannot be seen by the eye. They must be revealed by the deeper secrets of Kabbalah. So they ascended Pardes up, up, up to the highest elevation. The question is, of course, how did they enter into this heaven? Was it done physically? But physically, did they actually go there? The physical being, of course, cannot rise up to heaven. But were they awake at the time, with the full control of faculties, physical mind, growing up with their soul? Or did their soul remain below, and in their mind, the mind's eye, they could visualize this heavenly sphere? Now, Rashi HaKadosh says that they had the power of Kabbalah to say a certain heavenly name, and with this they could rise up to the heavens. Tosafot says that Tosafot claims that they did say this name, and with it their mind was elevated to a point where they could see, they could understand things that are going on above. So it would appear as though they actually went up. Now, of course, the Sifrei Kabbalah say that this means they actually visited heaven. But the point is that whatever it is, they did conceive. The minds rose to a point where they could conceive, whether it was the mind alone or the actual being, rose up, spiritual being rose up to the upper heavens. These four went into these upper heavens, and before going, Rabbi Akiva warned them, who said, when you come to the upper spheres, and you will see these marbles, stones, these pure marble stones. Be very careful. It will look like marble stones, because this means this represents certain heavenly words or heavenly concepts, and what you will see will appear like water. Be careful not to say water, water, because in heaven they cannot tolerate one who speaks a lie. It will appear like water. Remember, there is no actual water in heaven. Do not say water, water. At this point, Rabbi Nizal explains, this is very important, Rabbi Nizal's explanation here. Why did Rabbi Akiva say, do not say water, water? Why did he repeat the word water twice? Rabbi Nizal says, this is a very important lesson for always, to teach us what is meant by truth is always one. The truth is always one. As we say, Hashem Elokeichem Emet, Hashem is one, the truth is one. There cannot be more than one for the truth. Anything more than one is a lie. For example, Benel says, if you want to speak about an item that's made of pure gold, you say, this is gold. That's the end. That's one, and that's no more. That's the truth. Lies, you could say a lot. This is silver, this is copper, this is platinum, this is diamonds. A lot of things can be said about it. This item is 10 feet tall. Well, 10 feet and 1 1/4 inches tall exactly is true. Lies, you could say anything. There's any number of ways to speak about it as lies. 9 feet tall, 12, 15, or so. Truth is only one. Now, this is simple. Abinadab says, though, let's keep in mind the fact that does this mean that truth is limited? We say just one, and lies are not. Lies are infinite. Now, infinity certainly is superior to something which is limited. Would that mean that a lie is greater than the truth by the force, sheer force of numbers, that lies are infinite? Benedel says, definitely not so. Lies are not infinite. Infinity can apply only to Kedushah. Now, to show that lies are not infinite, as an example, again, Benedel says, the Gemara says that a person could never tell a lie that can be called a lie and attempt to be believed unless he taints it with a bit of truth. Now, the Gemara says, as an example, when Moshe Rabbeinu sent the spies to Israel to spy out the land, they came back and they misled the Jews into refusing to go to Israel. They said that there are giants there, the enemy is so powerful we can never overcome them. It's a suicide to go. They drew the Jews away from the desire to go to Israel. They revolted against Moshe Rabbeinu. The penalty was that every one of the Jews then over 20 was killed, died in the desert during those 40 years in the desert. Now the question is, the Gemara says, how were they believed? By lying? Of course not. It's impossible to be believed when telling a lie unless you taint it with truth. Therefore, they started off by telling him, the land is wonderful. The fruit there is far superior and more delicious than anything we've ever seen elsewhere. But the people there are impossible to conquer. So once they painted a little truth over it, the lie could then be accepted by others. They could fool others. Now, as a simple example, Abinadel says, if you want to sell something and cheat someone, you cannot take a piece of wood and sell it to a person and say, this is pure gold. They'll never buy it. It's impossible. So it's not considered a lie. It's considered a foolish statement. What then, if you want to sell this piece of wood, a person who was a cheat would paint the top gold, he would plate this wood or stone, plate it with gold, and then lie about it and say, this is solid gold. And then he could get over the lie because it has a touch of truth to it. Which means then that lies too are limited. They are not infinite. There is a limit to what the extent of lying also. It must be a touch of truth also. But, again, truth is one echad and lies a many. This is what Rabbi Akiva hinted at when he said, do not say water, water, meaning more than one, this is lies, but any lies cannot be tolerated in heaven. Well, the Gemara says the four entered into the heavenly spheres, rose up, and something happened to them. And as I looked, he looked, there are certain places in heaven that you cannot look at. You cannot see, because the Pasuk says, Hashem says, a person during his lifetime can see all the illuminated amount. A person looks at things that are too high for him. This means death, just like the parents of Shimshon. And the angel came for them to notify them that she's going to have a son, Shimshon, who would help the Jews. Shimshon's father said, we have seen an angel, we must die, because our eyes have seen a heavenly form. And the Torah says, Ki lo yereni hadam v'chai, no person can see me and live. They should told him, Shimshon's mother, who was greater than his father, only has said to him, if Hashem wanted to kill us, he would not have sent us an angel to see, to notify us that his news will have a son who will help the Jews. This is not made to kill us, it's to bring life. But that's an angel. But higher above that, the Shekhinah, the spirit of Hashem, no person can see that during his lifetime. And as I was so thrilled, entranced by what he saw, that his soul refused to leave. It attached itself to this high level of Kedusha and holiness. It refused to go back to the body. So therefore, in effect, the Gemara says, Ben Azai looked, and he passed away. This caused his passing. Not that it was a punishment. It was just that he didn't want to remain alive anymore. He wanted to remain there. Ben Zuma was not that fortunate. He looked too high, and he did not pass away. His mind was affected to a degree. This is the dangerous statement which some people deliberately mislead themselves or try to mislead others when they say, see, you cannot study things that are too deep, too high, kamalabigas, this makes a person insane and affects his mind. Here you see what the Gemara tells about Ben Zoma, who went too high mentally, and his mind became affected. Well, naturally, this does not pertain to people today who try to study Kabbalah, because no person today can learn something that is that deep that will, in Kiddushah, it will affect his mind. No person can rise up to this level where his mind can be affected. So this does not pertain at all to today's topic of Kabbalah. Besides, another point of warning, when we say Ben Zuma's mind was affected, does not mean, chas v'shalom, that he lost his senses. Because we see further, the Gemara warns about that. His mind was affected to a degree. But he retained his greatness, even in learning, as we'll see later. Why? Because his intentions were good. Third, Rabbi Akiva was the only one who entered into this so-called garden, and he left in peace, safely. He achieved this great status and left in peace and perfection. Fourth, Rachel cut the flowers there, which means that he was affected by it completely the wrong way. Cut the flowers means he cut off himself, cut himself off from faith. He actually lost his faith by what he saw. What did Rachel see? He saw the chief of the angels, and he was misled into thinking that this was Master Shalom Hashem. And so he lost his faith of Hashem Echad, and therefore he was so poisoned that the immediate decision in heaven was, while Achim was there, to state that Achim has lost his chance to get to Gan Eden, he has lost his mitzvot, he is destroyed. But of course, he did come back. He came down as one who had lost his faith, as an atheist. So we first return to the case of Ben Zuma. Interesting point. As we said, Ben Zuma's mind was slightly affected. The rabbis tested Denzel there. His mind was affected. Let's see how sharp his mind is. We'll ask him some deep questions. First question I asked, what is the law as far as making sterile a dog, castrate it, to destroy its ability to give birth? And we know that it is forbidden for a person to have an operation that would make him sterile, him or her, man or woman. Tanakh says that a person cannot be made sterile, and you cannot do it to an animal either. But this statement is said in the Parashah that speaks about sacrifices in the Holy Temple, which would imply, it would imply that we're speaking about kosher animals only. The Yonah asked, they asked Ben Zomer, what do you say about a dog? A dog is not a kosher animal. Are you allowed to destroy the organ of birth in a dog to make a dog sterile? Ben Zomer answered, what do we learn this pasuk of? We're forbidding this act. Will be Arzachem lo tasu. In your land, the Goyim do this, in your land you should not do. It says, in your land, everything in your land, kosher or unkosher, any living being in your land, it is forbidden to destroy their ability to give birth. This, of course, is the law. But this was a deep question to find the origin of a point that would prove that everything cannot, no item, no living being can be affected by the human method. This was proven by Ben Zomer. This was not sufficient. That asked Ben Zomer a second question. Again, a difficult question for them. They asked him to solve it. We know that a Kohen cannot marry a divorcee. Why? Because a Kohen is pure. He's got to have a woman who also is pure. Now, a divorcee was already married. There is something wrong with a divorcee, which is not a fault that a widow does not have. Divorcee is one who has a husband, whose husband divorced her, and she can still have her mind on that one who is alive. Plus the fact that she has already had relations with a husband. She is not pure enough for a Kohen. Kohen cannot marry a divorcee, but a Kohen is permitted to marry a widow. The Kohen Gadol, who is greater and holier than all Kohanim, he has a special law. He cannot marry a widow either. He must have a betula. Betula means a girl who never had relations in her life. English word for his virgin, one who is pure, was never married, or never had relations, a betula. I asked Ben Zomer, what about a betula? That means she still is a betula. She still possesses that virginity, but she is pregnant. Can a Kohen Gadol marry her? Now, what is the question? The question is, does such a condition exist? Could this be possible? Why? Because the Gemara says that Shmuel, one of the rabbis of the Gemara, was known as the greatest doctor of all time. He was famous for his knowledge of medicine at the time of the Gemara. Knowledge of medicine, physiology. In fact, the Gemara says that he brought a cure to Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Yehuda HaNasi, chief rabbi of the Gemara, who had the disease of the eye, very painful disease of the eyelid. And there was no way to get it cured until Shmuel came. And he said, I'll put a certain salve on it. He said, I couldn't take it. He couldn't take the salve could weigh the tiniest, the thousandth of an ounce. I couldn't take that. Shmuel said, well, I have a strong salve, but I'll put on the back of your head. And this will penetrate through the back of your head, reach up to the eye, exactly, but not to the eyelid. This will cure the eye. He did this, Of course, you have to imagine how great a doctor is, be able to measure a sieve that would whose effects would penetrate through, seep through, and go through to the eye and cure it. The Bein HaKadosh was so impressed by this that he wanted to give Shmuel his smicha, his degree of ordination. And Shmuel said, "You cannot give it to me because I have seen the book written by Adam Harishon, Adam who wrote the future of all generations, the leaders of all generations. Adam Harishon wrote in this sefer that Shmuel will never get smicha. He will cure the Bein HaKadosh, but he will not be able to get smicha, so there's no sense in even trying." He rather tells many other cases about Shmuel's ability to cure, his vast knowledge of medicine, undoubtedly far superior to today's, lahavdil, today's doctors, if we can call them doctors. Now, Shmuel's knowledge of the human body was such as Shmuel said, it is possible, very rarely so, only by extraordinary expert, but it's possible for a woman to have relations and actually become pregnant without breaking the virginity. Such a thing is possible, but it takes an unusual amount of knowledge part of the man. Now, in case a woman, let's say a betula, is pregnant, and she is a betula. In other words, how do we get that? The Kohen Gadol married her. And then he found that she was truly a betula. Yet he also found that she was pregnant. So 2 weeks later, he found that she was in the third month. So she was a betula. She had not fooled him. And she was pregnant. And the question now is, may he continue to live with her or not? In other words, is this considered having had relations, though she is a betula or not? Ben Zoma answered, in this case, the Kohen Gadol may continue to live with her. Why? Because this betula did not have relations. We are not concerned about the possibility of a person who has that much knowledge that he can make a betula pregnant without breaking the betulim. What then? We say, most probably, most chances are, that she became pregnant through artificial insemination, which did not destroy her betulim. Now, since artificial insemination is not considered relations, she is still considered a betula, and she is permissible for the Kohen Gadol to retain as a wife. This was the answer of Ben Zoma. The analysis of this answer is very deep, and this certainly proved the deep wisdom and knowledge of Ben Zoma. After his mind had become affected to a degree by having seen something that was so deep and so high, he still was superior in knowledge to most of the rabbis of the Gemara. He even says that one time the Yeshua was standing near the area of the Beit HaMikdash, and Ben Zoma passed, that is, Ben Zoma was there, and he did not stand up for the Yeshua. The Yeshua was the elder, Ben Zoma was younger, and he did not stand up for him. Now, this is not an ordinary crime. Not standing up for a rabbi, especially Rabbi Yeshua, who was one of the chief rabbis then, is considered a crime that is so serious, it's tantamount to disbelief in Hashem. To that extent, because the Gemara tells us that the fear of Hashem, respect for Hashem, the respect for rabbi must be equal. And that is shown by the standing up, just as you stand up for a Sefer Torah, which is not alive, surely you have to stand up for a living Torah, which means a rabbi. Yeshua said to Ben Zoma, from where to where? Where are you coming from? Where are you going to? You're so occupied that you don't see me. You didn't stand up. That he wanted kavod for himself. He wanted to stop Ben Zomer, teach him to avoid getting into a sin of this magnitude. He asked from where to where, meaning Ben Zomer, remind yourself what the Mishnah says. In Pirkei Avot, the selected words of the fathers, but a Jew should always remind himself from where and to where. Or where did you come? Where did you come from? Where were you born from? Don't have any conceit, haughtiness. You came from a drop that's filthy. This is where a human being comes from. What is your origin? The lowest form of filth. Where are you going to? You're going to the grave where the worms will eat you and destroy you. What future do you have? How could you pride yourself on your physical form? This is simply a person who thinks that he has looks, extraordinarily handsome, prides himself on his eyes, on his hair, thinks about himself physically, that he should know where this came from and where it's going to. It's going back to dust. This would teach a person humbleness, humility. This is what he said to Ben Zomer, why don't you stop and think for a moment where you really are? Now, this would give you that necessary humbleness to show proper respect to others. Ben Zomer said, sorry, my mind was, it was something so deep, I couldn't see around me. I was thinking about that which I had seen in heaven. I was rationalizing what these deep points, topic of creation of the world, the heavenly world, and that's why I could not see. This was not done intentionally to avoid getting up here. This answer, of course, was accepted. And he later says that Acher, the fourth one, Acher, was unsuccessful. He turned evil when he saw this angel in heaven who appeared before him as though he was sitting in heaven and writing down the mitzvot of the Jews, and in front of his eyes, to disprove, even though he turned evil, to disprove it, this angel is taken quickly, grasped, and given 60 fiery lashes. He's shown this is only an angel. But at the same time, he was told his sechut, his mitzvot, are erased, and a heavenly voice came out and said, all sinners return to Hashem, except Ached. Only Ached cannot return to Hashem. His teshuvah is not accepted. Ached said, if that's the case, since I'm being driven out of Gan Eden, no chance for it, let me at least go down to earth and have my fun, live while I can. Chas v'shalom. But even it shows what a fallacy this was. How wrong this theory is on the part of the Shayyid. Because no person can say, live while you can. Even that person, even if Chas v'shalom, a person is assured of not having an end and going to Gehinnom, he has still not reached bottom. He can do worse things that can take him to a place where he'd wish he was up at the level of Gehinnom before he started to go down. So bad are the differences in the level of Yehudah themselves. Above all, Ein Hasher should never say that, because Ein Hasher should never say all is lost. Never is hope lost for a person while he is alive. There is always an opening for Teshuvah. Even in the case of Acher, this was his test. You must do Teshuvah. We're going to test you to make it more difficult for you by having a voice from heaven tell you that there is no chance of Teshuvah. But if you really want, nothing can stop you from doing teshuvah. That's the zakut of teshuvah that is so great. It is all taught, never should a Jew lose hope, because Hashem will take back everyone who wants to come back to Hashem. In the zakut of teshuvah especially, will we see the return of the Jews to our